keepers, gym lovers, and rock hounds. Welcome to There's a Rock for That. This is the show that is all about crystals, gems, and rocks of all varieties, where we will explore the folklore, metaphysical properties, and healing applications of the stone people. I'm Pterodactyl, and I welcome all of you, whether you are here to connect with the Crystal Kingdom, or discover what your rocks are about, or even sail the mystic seas to the land of dragons, where fairies greet us and unicorns gallop through magical forests to sacred stone temples. I'm so happy that you are here to share the experience. All right, well, today is our year-end open lines, open minds segment. So feel free to call in with your questions about stones, share your crystal journey with us, or even get a free mini crystal reading. And also, the topic today is going to be the foundation stones. It's something that has come up a few times during the course of this show, and it's time, I think, to finally, you know, let's examine them. Let's talk about them. What stones they are. What's this mean? What's it all about? Alfie. Anyways, we will be getting into that at different times during the show, probably in between taking calls. And also we're going to look at 2015, which is finally coming to a close here. Can you believe it? This year seemed to go so fast, and it marks the first year that we have been on the Attune Magazine Radio Network here, and it's been wonderful, and we've had a really stellar year, so I thought it'd be fun to talk about some of the highlights of that, kind of take a look at the year in crystals here on There's a Rock for That, and, you know, maybe drop some hints about what to look forward to in 2016. All right, so that is what is on the agenda for today, folks. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun with this. And this is going to, like I said, this is our year-end show. So there's not going to be a show next week. We will come back that first week in January, right after New Year's. And hopefully everybody will be, you know, not hungover. But it's okay if you are, as long as you're not driving, right? Who knows? I think you can drive hungover. What do I know? Anyways, let's go ahead and talk to our first caller here. Let's see, the person who has been holding the longest. I'm going to try and get to these calls as they come up, so there's not a really long wait like there has been on some of our other online show. We try to get to everybody, and remember that these are mini readings, so it's not, you know, a half an hour reading, even though I think that's happened a couple of times because it needed to, right? Happens when it needs to. All right, so we are going to go ahead and take this first call here. This is coming from area code 928. Area code 928, caller, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi, what's your name, and thanks for calling in today?
My name is Alfida.
Oh, hello. And were you calling to ask a question about crystals or share your journey with them, or did you want a free mini reading?
A free mini reading.
Okay. That's fine. Okay. All right, then. We're going to do a crystal reading for you. Was there a particular question that you had or an area of life you wanted to take a look at?
Relationships with a person with the initials DB. I want to see if
you
can pick up
this. Okay, let's just see what comes up around that, right? Okay.
Yes.
So, okay. Okay, I'm going to draw a couple stones on this. Okay, two interesting stones come up on this. The first stone is Chevron Amethyst. And that's like an amethyst that has that white quartz in it that makes it little V shape. It's a really, really gorgeous, gorgeous stone. And then also, the other stone that came up is Cat's Eye, which is another interesting stone. But let's go ahead and talk about that Chevron Amethyst first. Really what this is saying in regards to the relationship is it's almost like we've got to speaks to like the way things are organized or structured in the relationship. Like that needs to be like a focus. I feel like there's some maybe loose ends that need to be tidied up before we can keep moving forward with this relationship. It really seems to have to do with just some things that need to be communicated, okay, in order for this to, you know, kind of go in a certain direction towards, you know, there being like kind of an increase in closeness and the bond, and kind of really let's put this on a good foundation is really what this is talking about. Okay. So I don't know if that's a new relationship or one that maybe, you know, we haven't nailed down like the specifics or really defined it quite yet. Okay. And, you know, the thing with Chevron Amethyst is also, you know, make sure we both people in the relationship have the right priorities in mind, you know, that we're on the same page is what this is about. And then with that, you know, the cat's eye is very interesting because it has to do with understanding other people's problems and being willing to sort of accept the flaws of each other, your own flaws as well as the other person's flaws, and, you know, kind of have that kind of, I want to say mercy, the spirit of mercy with this. So for some reason, those two things seem to be important when it comes to this relationship. That's what the stones are speaking to, at least.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense because this is a past relationship that came back. It's been 2 years since we've been together. There's a lot of things that happened. And as of recently, he kind of expressed to me that he still wants to be with me and stuff. But, like, right now, like you said, there are still some loose ends. And I just kind of still feel there's a distance. So I'm just wondering where his head is at on stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, I think the desire is there, and it's like we really just need to come together, spend some time kind of communicating what each person wants and getting on the same page. I think he's very sincere, you know, as far as his desire and everything. But sometimes, yeah, we gotta kind of get things in order to make that really happen and not just be talk, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for that.
You're so welcome, and bright blessings to you, and I hope you enjoy the holidays.
You too.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right. We are off to a fine start here. We just had our first caller. Thank you very much for that call. And like I said, our topic on this episode, and we're going to talk about this sort of in between taking calls as they come up, is the foundation stones. Now, when I had a few months ago, I forget when it is, like I said, this year went really fast. You know, I had Judy Hall on, you know, author of the Crystal Bibles and stuff. And we were talking about problems that I don't even know if I want to call them problems. Let's say like interesting things that she would encounter when she would be asked to speak at a Christian church. Okay. And, you know, some people feeling like, oh, you know, these stones are, I forget the word she used, but I'm assuming it's one that they would use a lot in England. But mainly like this is ungodly or something. And she, you know, kind of talked about how she would remind them, you know, that, you know, that, well, the foundation stones are crystals. And not everybody knows what that is. And let me also preface this with saying that, you know, sure, next week is Christmas, right? And there's millions of people, you know, that celebrate it, and there's millions and millions of people that don't, too. I am a person who does celebrate Christmas, so I didn't want to do a show that was like the Christmas show with the, you know, the manger story and everything that kind of matches everything that we see on TV. So I thought it'd be interesting to talk about an aspect of Christmas in a sense, because I see it that way, because it's connected to Christianity, to Christ, et cetera. And it comes from the Bible, and, you know, I'm not preaching religion or anything, but I thought that it would be very interesting to examine just what these things are, these foundation stones. So basically, this goes back to, For one thing, it goes back to the book of Revelations. And also, it's a historical kind of thing. You know, the 14th verse of Revelations 1 states that each of the foundation stones will be inscribed with the names of the apostles. And it really wasn't until the 8th or 9th centuries that scholars tried to find analogies between the stones and the apostles. Like, why would one particular type of stone be connected, right, to a specific apostle? And they were really, these early authors were really concerned with the religious significance of the gems, and they didn't really care that much about the stones themselves. They were just looking for what it symbolized. They knew very little of their characteristics, and they may not have even seen the stones they were writing about. You know, the pagan traditions of the stones and the stones' inherent qualities and powers were ignored at the time, and in many cases scorned by those early Christians. And it wasn't until Christianity had established a firm hold on the Greek and Roman worlds that resistance to ancient traditions actually weakened. And we have Andreas, the Bishop of Caesarea, is credited as one of the first writers to associate the apostles with the specific gems. And his 10th century treatise gave a listing of the 12 stones and the reason each one had a connection to a particular apostle. And that's not to say this wasn't a controversial thing. You know, some in the church at that time took objection to that designation with the argument that Christ alone should be held as the foundation of the church, and that the color of each stone represented a facet of Christ's divine spirit. Like green jasper for satisfaction, the blue sapphire for the soul, the bright red chalcedony for truth, green emerald representing his kindness and goodness, kind of a nail-colored sardonyx, the strength of the spiritual life, and the red sardius, the shedding of his blood, and the yellow chrysolite, his divine nature, sea green pearl representing moderation and control of passion, green topaz, or chrysolite, as it's also called, representing the uprightness, whereas the harsh-colored chrysoprase represented the sternness towards sinners, and the violet or purple jacinth, the royal dignity, and finally the purple amethyst with the touch of red representing perfection. And, you know, so that was like one of the ideas back then, and other works which list the foundation stones and associate each stone with Christian virtues, they're known collectively as the bestiaries. Okay, and a bestiary is a compilation of descriptions of animals and plants and minerals, accompanied by explanations and all these correlations with Christian dogma. And a lot of those collections came out in the 11th and 12th and 13th century. And included the 3rd century Liber Memorabilium by Selinius, who was a 4th century Greek, and also, in the 7th century, Isidore of Seville also wrote one as well. And, you know, it's really, really kind of a fascinating thing. You know, throughout all of these centuries, you know, these ideas come along of, and they're really an interpretation of Revelation 21. If you look at Revelation 21:19, the foundations of the wall of the city were garnished with all manner of precious stones. That is, the prophets and apostles on whose faith and doctrine the whole city of the church is founded. Of these, it is said in Psalm 15:1, it's founded on the holy hills. The wall is adorned with every precious stone. And on, you can find all these different biblical references to stones, and they being the very foundation of the church itself. And, you know, from that point forward, the interpretation of each stone listed by John in Revelation is given. You know, there's references to other passages in the Bible that people bring up as being connected to stones as well. But just to give you an idea of what these stones are, there's Rainy. And Rainbow House. Hello, everybody. Just looking in the chat room at first. But let's go ahead and go through these foundation stones. And if anybody calls in with a question or wants a mini reading or wants to share any, we will certainly take those calls. So in John, in Revelations, John says the first stone in the foundation of the wall is jasper. So that first foundation, that basically they're saying the adornment of the first foundation is jasper. And that is representing the idea that faith is evergreen, like green jasper, strengthening the site. But whether it be faith in one's country or in the church triumphant, which, you know, is in question here, does not primarily occur except to those coming to church. There will be an entry to the aforesaid city. And while he who does not have it will not be able to enter, jasper is said to have 17 species. It's also known to be many colors. It's said to come from many regions of the world. And the best, you know, in this idea of for a foundation stone, of the first foundation being jasper, is the translucent green and color, because it was thought to have more virtues than the other jaspers. So it's kind of interesting, you know, that a lot of the interpretation of this is, you know, you can see how subjective it is. You know, green's the best. It displays these virtues, you know, are superior to the others. So it's kind of interesting. Of course, you know, these stones that are said to be the foundation of the Jerusalem to be, you know, of course they're going to, you want the best, right? And you want to show, you know, that it's going to be that kind of gloriousness, I guess is a way to put it. So on to the second foundation, that is the second foundation, the second decoration of the foundation is sapphire, and in color that's similar to that of a clear sky, struck by the rays of the sun, sending forth burning, a flash of lightning, signifying the hope by which we are carried off to heaven. Through it, we are fired with the love of heavenly things, disdaining love of the present world, so that we can truly say with the apostle, our conversation is in heaven. You know, and that's a quote from Philippians 3:20. I will lay thy foundations with sapphires. It's also found in Isaiah 54:11. And so the image of the sapphire is most fitting for the fingers of the king. It shines out in an outstanding way, resembles that beautiful sky, and the power of nature has endowed it with such honor that it is called sacred and deservedly the gemstone of gemstones. That's how sapphire was valued in that day. It's kind of funny because I don't feel like a lot of people talk about sapphires very much, but yet, you know, centuries and centuries ago, and for, you know, a really long time in civilization, it's been a very, very highly valued stone. So that's the second foundation, which signifies the hope of heaven, basically. And then the third foundation, or third decoration of the foundation of the New Jerusalem, essentially, is chalcedony. And that being the yellow color, because you might think, well, chalcedony, there's a wide variety of what that can look like. Well, this is the one that is pale yellow, similar to lamplight, and shines more under the open sky than indoors. Warmed by the sun or by a rub of the fingers, it attracts particles to itself. It does not resist the subjects of the engraver. And it signifies the charity which is within us, hidden in the heart. It is pale yellow like lamplight, but when it is forced into the open for the benefit of others, then what its virtue was inside is demonstrated outside. Touched by the sun, that is Christ or the Spirit, namely the finger, it attracts sinners to itself, that it cannot in any way be cut, signifies that it is not wanting in times of adversity, but rather of advantage. And in this context, it's said in the Song of Solomon, love is strong as death, jealousy is cruel as the grave. The coals, therefore, are coals of fire, which hath the most vehement flame. many waters cannot quench love. So that's the kind of idea of chalcedony there, that it can't be carved because it is not shattered by adversity or even softened by fulsome praise. And so in that context, you know, charity is patient, it's kind. Charity, it suffers everything, it endures everything, it is not puffed up, it is not an ambitious act. And that's coming from Corinthians 13. But, you know, it's a really beautiful kind of idea. And, you know, there is something, you know, kind of interest here, I think, in the order of these foundation stones. So we've got faith first, we've got hope second, and we've got charity third. And chalcedony is really kind of an interesting way of representing charity. And so the fourth foundation, or the fourth decoration of the foundation of this new Jerusalem, is Smaragdus. And you might be thinking, Smaragdus, how come I'm not familiar with that? Because it's not really a word that we throw around a lot, right? You know, and generally, you know, when we talk about Smaragdus, we are usually talking about emerald, you know. Smaragdus is a Latin word. It's supposed to be a transparent precious stone of bright green color. So there's been that association with emerald, even some beryls, jaspers, and possibly even malachite. And again, you know, I think we've talked about this before, how a lot of times it's hard to know in these early texts on stones exactly which stone, because by our more modern names, could it possibly be. But there seems to be a strong argument for it being emerald. And the fourth foundation, Smaragdus, outdoes in its greenness every kind of grass in the boughs of trees. It makes those who wear it appear attractive, makes the air grow green. It yields on image just as a mirror does, and it signifies virginity, which wholly preserves the freshness of the flesh, and it surpasses all other virtues in a way. Because it preserves virginity, it is more angelic than human. Moreover, it is pleasing to angels and God and man, and carries within itself the image of Christ, because it follows the Lamb wherever it goes. And for this reason, the stone is called the fourth foundation, because virginity is recommended in the four Gospels. So that's another kind of interesting thing. And I looked at that, you know, before, and I have to say, I do have some questions about that, because I, you know, a lot of times, you know, we talk about, you know, the interpretations of the, or translations rather, of the original text, whether, you know, we're talking the Greek, we're talking the Hebrew text that were translated, and, you know, just the idea of the Virgin Mary, you know, what did that mean? Did it mean a young girl, or did it mean someone who never, you know, never got it on, for lack of a better term? I could come up with a better way of saying that, I'm sure. But, you know, I also wonder about this idea of virginity, you know, because I also think, in a sense, you know, we're talking about the kind of purity. That's what emerald makes me think of, that it's more like a pureness in spirit than it is necessarily a flesh related thing. I don't know, you know, so that's just something to think about. This is some questions that I have about this fourth foundation stone, Smaragdus, which I think is emerald. Okay, something to think about. Moving along, and the fifth foundation is sardonyx. And, you know, you might think, what is that? I've heard of onyx, but I haven't heard of sardonyx. And really, you know, way back when, Isidore said that it has the white of onyx and the red of sard. And so it's got these three colors. It's another stone that's been kind of interpreted as like this could be one of several stones. But basically in this, the foundation stones of Revelations, it is said to signify suffering of the saints. And at the bottom, that in this world they are considered worthless and despised, you know, with the context of coming from, say, Job 12, the just upright man is laughed to scorn, a lamp despised, and the thought of him is that is at ease. So it's this idea that, you know, that you may be, you know, a good person, you may be a saint, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be seen that way during your lifetime, you know. And this also has to do with this concept of sort of martyrdom, in a sense. And again, connected to the martyrdom of Christ, you know. It's said of sardonyx that the stone does not pull any of the wax away because the righteous man forgives his persecutors fully from the heart, retaining no bitterness. And according to Ecclesiasticus, forgive thy neighbor the hurt that he hath done unto thee, so shall thy sins also be forgiven when thou prayest. So this virtue of suffering is said to be the fifth foundation because it diminishes the infirmity of the body, which is ruled by the five senses. So it's really kind of an interesting thing, that idea of the virtue of suffering. So I don't know that we always think of suffering as a virtue, right? I think of patience as a virtue. But yeah, suffering, I think that's something, you know, if we, and I think it has a lot to do with the idea of like, it's an ego thing, right? Where everybody wants to be, if they don't want to be, they at least want to be thought of as being virtuous. So you want to be charitable. You know, you want to be kind, you want to be compassionate, all of those things that are virtues, honesty, and, you know, being, you know, compassionate, having temperance, you know, all of these different kind of ideas. Suffering never seems to come up unless maybe you're talking to a Buddhist and it's like all life is suffering, you know, and it's not such a big deal. But I think, you know, the Western mind, we don't aspire to that. You know, we don't aspire to suffering in a virtuous way and forgiving the cause of our suffering. Just something to think about. Okay, I'm just throwing it out there. But that's the fifth foundation stone is sardonyx, and it represents suffering. Now moving on to the sixth foundation stone. It's a sard. And it was called sard because it was found in Sardis. You might have guessed that. And it is red in color. And again, it's an interesting, you know, stone, because thing that's gets kind of tricky about all of these things, like for example, chalcedony was one of our stones. Well, both carnelian and sard are varieties of silica chalcedony, right? And so oftentimes the two terms sard and sardonyx are actually kind of confused in the crystal world. You know, are they talking about the same stone? How is it different from carnelian? Is sardonyx actually some kind of onyx? And the first thing to kind of, you know, get clear on is that sard and sardonyx, despite the fact that the names are similar, actually do refer to different stones. And both of these stones are types of quartz. And sard is a type of solid colored chalcedony quartz, while sardonyx is more like a banded agate, right? So just in case, you know, these terms, because obviously we don't use them so often. when we're talking about stones or when we're looking for crystals, you don't usually walk into a crystal shop and say, I'd like a piece of sard. You know, I've never heard anybody say that. And the thing that's interesting is, you know, sard traditionally has been used to refer to kind of a darker brown chalcedony. It's kind of hard to distinguish it actually from carnelian, because carnelian is kind of a brown, red to orange chalcedony, but it's also colored by the impurities of iron oxide. That's where you get that, you know, really recognizable carnelian color. So anyways, moving along, just wanted to kind of, in case you weren't familiar with the idea of sard. And, you know, in this context of the foundation stones, it is said to be the color of blood, that kind of red, more reddish sard. And for this reason, it's the perfect constancy of the martyrs who poured forth their blood for Christ. And for that reason, it's placed in the sixth position, because Christ in the sixth age and on the sixth day consecrated his martyrdom with his blood. Supposedly, the sard gets its name from Sardis, where it was first found, and it gets its name from that reddish color as well. So that sixth foundation of the foundation stones, the decoration of the foundation essentially decorated with sard to signify the sort of perfect constancy of the martyrs. The idea that, you know, these are people that gave everything for a cause. You know, it's kind of interesting, because in the context of today's world, I think the idea and the word martyr has really taken on some nuances that I'm not sure it's always had. You know, at least in the West, you know, we don't really have any kind of respect, I guess. You know, for someone who decides to be a martyr for what they believe in, obviously, you know, in the world we live in, we don't see it in those terms. We see it as in like that person's crazy, because we've seen examples of people that would maybe call themselves martyrs do terrible things. You know, and I feel like the line between martyr and murder has been blurred in our present day mainstream, you know, thought, let's say. So it's just something to think about, because, you know, obviously these ideas were written about, you know, hundreds and hundreds, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago by all these different writers. And, you know, they looked at these virtues and in a different way than in our, you know, they didn't have our modern lens through which we see things. So it is something to kind of think about, because I thought about this when I was reading about the sixth foundation, and I thought, man, you know, I don't know how many people would really relate to that idea as being a virtuous one necessarily. Okay, but there you have it. This is old stuff, right? So on to the seventh foundation stone, or decoration on the seventh foundation, is chrysolite. The one that's similar to the color of gold, and because it's close to that color, it's the reason it's where its name comes from is Christos, or Chrysos, which means gold. It seems to give out glittering sparks, and it signifies wisdom, which exceeds all other gifts, just as gold exceeds all other metals. Again, you know, we may not look at gold necessarily in the same way that these early peoples and scholars and writers did. And it goes on to say, wisdom, through the medium of preaching, gives out glittering sparks, and that is an encouragement, setting alight the hearts of those who hear them. So chrysolite, shiny like gold, flashes like fire, similar to the sea, displaying something of the sea green color as well. And it's one that, you know, would be very so precious in that time. Again, Chrysolite, not one of our most popular crystals in our modern times, but definitely was seen as valued there and you know, representing wisdom. So wisdom is the seventh foundation, chrysolite being the decoration of that. And then we move on to the eighth foundation stone, which is beryl. We've talked about beryl before on this show. In this, it said the stone is polished into a hexagonal shape, shines like water struck by the sun, and is said to be of such heat that it warms the hand of the holder and signifies the virtue of mercy. And mercy operating in six ways: warming the cold hearts of the infirm to a love of God and one's neighbor, according to Proverbs. If thine enemy be hungry, give him bread to eat, and if he thirsty, give him water to drink, for thou shalt heap coals of fire upon his head. And in Matthew 5, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. This virtue is placed in the eighth foundation because, not here, but in the eighth age, it is said it expects its reward. In this context, the Psalm, thou shalt eat the labor of thine hands. Happy shalt thou be, and shall be well with thee. So it's said to really be this sort of idea of mercy operating in all of these ways, feeding the hungry, you know, dressing the poor, showing all. And I think it's, you know, something again that we. The idea of mercy, you know. I mean, I don't hear that a lot, you know. I don't hear people talk about mercy a lot. I don't hear them bring up the word a lot. I feel like we've lost such touch with the concept of it. And what do we have in its place? We have human judgment. Well, why is he homeless? You know, get a job. You know, that's not my problem. You know, that seems to be, I hear a lot more of that than I hear of people being merciful. So, you know, it's something to realize that it's much more valuable when it's in practice, maybe than it is in conversation. And maybe, you know, we talk about practicing, you know, this idea of gratitude. And especially like during the holidays, people talk so much about, you know, feeling grateful. It's like, okay, I have 365 days of gratitude. I'm grateful for this. I'm grateful for my socks. I'm grateful for my toes. You know, you see people will go on and on and on about what they're grateful for. And one, that's a beautiful thing because it is important to appreciate what we do have. But my goodness, you know, have we become a little bit myopic about what we have, and instead of seeing others that are without and showing mercy and giving to them? Something to think about. Tis the season, right, for giving, I hope. But anyways, beryl is the eighth foundation, the decoration stone. So on to the ninth foundation, and that is topaz. And two colors are specified with this of topaz, because we know topaz comes in many different colors. The gold and the clear color is what's specified with it because of the idea that gold and clear color is touched by the splendor of the sun, and that, you know, of course, very pleasing to look at, and that is one of the, you know, major stones cherished by kings. Topaz signifies contemplation, love which with contemplation burns, colors of gold, the understanding which illuminates contemplation gives its clear color. In the contemplation of the Lord is seen more clearly, and men are more especially drawn to his love when they are open to it. So there's that idea that, you know, the topaz shines with every color because contemplation shines with the splendor of every virtue. It's being considered in this concept the biggest of stones because contemplation expands the heart greatly. And so it's placed in this ninth foundation position because contemplation aligns contemplative people with the nine orders of angels, okay? And topaz comes from the island of the same name. It is more precious than it is rare. You know, you can find plenty of topaz on the market. And so that's kind of a fact there of how much value they placed on the idea of contemplation, you know? Where did that go after so many centuries, I ask you? I ask you. All right, so moving on to the 10th foundation stone. We have a stone we've discussed on this show, chrysoprase. And, you know, that's a beautiful stone. And it signifies the desire of the heavenly land, which burns more brightly the more it is affected by tribulation, because as Gregory, Pope Gregory, has said, what a bellows does to coal, tribulation does to love. Chrysoprase is placed in this 10th foundation position because holy men and women, I'm sure, in their desire for heaven, hasten to reach the 10th order of angels by observing the 10 commandments. The 10th order is the one which will be renewed from men. In that context, man is calm, and this goes back to Luke 15, the 10th piece of silver, which the woman searched for and found, is a kind of an allegory there. But it's really kind of this interesting idea of once we get to the 9th and 10th foundations, you know, angels start entering the concepts here. So something to think about there. And then moving on, the 11th foundation stone is hyacinth. And this stone changes in accordance with the weather. On clear days, it is transparent. When the sky is overcast, it's opaque. And for that reason, it signifies the judgment of holy men who use it as the Lord did to adapt to all conditions of life in order to win the hearts of men. And so the stone's placed in the 11th foundation position because through it, especially, all manner of sin is avoided. The learned say that there are three kinds of hyacinth. The best is the kind whose color is not so dense as to be obscure or so light as to be transparent, but has a purple myrtle-like bloom drawn from both parts of the spectrum. Another interesting thing along with this, it was believed back then that if you placed a hyacinth stone in your mouth, it would feel colder than other kinds of stones. So and you might ask, like, okay, I've never seen a stone called hyacinth in my local gym shop, right? And again, you know, this was written a really, really, really long time ago. And the idea of hyacinth, basically, when you think of like the colors involved, you could have been easily talking about what we know as a kind of jasper that has that sort of interesting color that they're referring to with it. And again, you know, we can't forget, you know, this was written a really, really long time ago, and mainly this was written by biblical writers, religious scholars in various cultures. You know, you have the Romans, you have the Greeks, you have that new Christianity church, you know, coming together. And they weren't really so much experts on stones, right? They were more experts on the actual texts that they were, you know, reinterpreting, you know. But, you know, if you wanted to find hyacinth, you could maybe find places that would be selling it under that name. But it's not something that is so common, right? And of course, hyacinth itself, you know, has a lot of, you know, interesting folklore to it, mainly coming from the Greeks and the myth connected to hyacinth, and also, of course, our flower of that name as well. And then finally, the 12th foundation stone is amethyst. And amethyst is said to signify the humility of the saints. So it's associated with humility. And the idea of humility is small, like the violet. And it's acceptable to everyone, even to our enemies, as pride, in contrast, is viewed by everyone with detest, right? You know, and there's a reference to Ecclesiasticus saying, you know, pride is hateful before God and men. And for that reason, amethyst is placed in the final foundation position as if watching over all the rest, and as if humility always reckons itself the least and always takes the last place. So that's really kind of a fascinating kind of concept, you know, and this idea of these foundation stones, you know, all 12 of them, the veneration of gems and their metaphysical properties, really has been a very long-standing tradition in the Christian church. You know, some of the most prominent authors on the subject have been people, you know, of really high status in the Holy Roman Church. And it's this interesting idea that, you know, all of these different virtues connected with all these different stones has really been a huge, huge contributor to what we have today, where we have our modern birthstones. You know, we've talked a lot about, you know, where did those modern birthstones come from? Well, yeah, you know, they're connected to the foundation stones. And before the foundation stones, we have the breastplate of the high priest of Aaron, Moses' brother. We have all these references to stones all through the text. We've had outside of the Bible itself, you have all of these, you know, writers in the church, you know, different monks, all these old bestiaries and everything, referring to stones, referring to their metaphysical properties, their qualities, their virtues. Obviously, in this context, most being associated with Christian virtues, Christian values. So, you know, it's a Christmas season, right? It's like the big, you know, blowout, you know, Christian event, you know, in a sense. And I think that for my fellow, you know, crystal keepers out there and stone guardians, I think that, you know, you have to, you know, take it into context, whether you're Christian or not, that these stones and working with them and thinking of them in the ways that we do with the show in the metaphysical sense, this is an old tradition that we've all become a part of. And there is that Christian, you know, influence in a lot of what we have today in the world of crystals, and definitely in the jewelry stores when it comes to birthstones. And so it's like they're inseparable in a sense, even though you may encounter people that might consider themselves to be maybe of a different mind, maybe of a more fundamentalist mindset, and they just look at this and maybe they don't understand the history of it within their own religion, and they may, just like Judy Hall had shared with us a few months ago, you know, look at you and say, well, that's, I don't do anything with crystals, they're unholy. You know, they don't know what they're talking about. Okay. I mean, that's just flat out, they don't know what they're talking about. So enjoy the Christmas holidays if you celebrate it with your crystals. Because, hey, it should be, you know, you can't have crystal or Christmas without Chris. I guess. I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that. Anyways, but that's just what I wanted to say is, like, you know, they belong in the celebration just as much as a, you know, a donkey in your nativity scene. All righty then. Well, moving right along, we are going to take a short break here. And when we come back, we are going to do some more looking back at 2015. And also taking a little peek at what's on the platter for 2016 and take any more calls that we may have. So everybody just hold on tight and we will be right back after these important messages from our network.
Schedule your reading with one of the psychics at Attune. PsychicsAtTune.com. Have you always wanted to create your own tarot or oracle deck but thought you needed to be a graphic artist? Self-published decks are really hot right now, and I could show you how to do this. No Photoshop required. Contact me, Mary Nail, at marynail@attunemagazine.com.
www.theresarockforthat.com. Visit the website where there's a stone for that, an idea for that, a story about that, and even a reading with solutions for that because, well, we just happen to rock like that. Need to relax? Or raise your vibration? Want to know how gems, crystals, and rocks can enhance your life? Get a crystal consultation. For entertainment purposes only, crystal consultations do not in any way replace treatment by licensed healthcare professionals. Come explore the wonders of the Crystal Kingdom at www.theresarockforthat.com.
Welcome to Attune Magazine Radio.
All right. Well, welcome back. You are listening to There's a Rock for That on the Attune Magazine Radio Network. And make sure you check out attunemagazine.com. There's always some really cool stuff on there, interesting articles and posts and reviews of books and decks and oh my, there's all kinds of great stuff there. So, you know, I have to say, I think January 2nd, if we're being exact, would actually mark the 1 year anniversary of There's a Rock for That being here on the Attune Magazine Radio Network. And I have to say, I have had a blast getting to know the Attune family and a family of listeners. And we've really had what I feel is like been a really stellar year. We've had so many wonderful guests on. When you think about it, because I've been thinking about it, at least thinking like, oh my gosh, how do I top that with 2016? And I'm still not sure. But we had Diana Cooper, the unicorn and angel lady. We had the probably most well-known person in the world of crystals, Judy Hall, on. And last week we had Marie-Ange Faugerolas, who just came out with a definitive guide to angels. So we've had angels and unicorns. We talked about Atlantis. We have kind of, you know, talked about contact stones, working with angels and ascended masters. We have covered a lot of ground, and we've certainly covered a lot of stones here. And the thing that I guess I realized early on about this show is that we're never going to run out of crystals. There are thousands of varieties of stones and crystals, with new ones being, I want to say, rediscovered or newly discovered or maybe renamed even all the time. So, you know, if there's ever a stone that you really want to know more about that I haven't talked about on the show, shoot me an email, and I'm glad to, you know, feature it on one of the episodes, and so we can explore it in more detail and look at the makeup of it, and the folklore and the metaphysical applications of it, as well as any healing properties might have too. So my first feeling was like, there's just no way that next year I can top, you know, what I did this year. And so my New Year's intention, so to speak, is to not even try. And so I want to make it more of 2016. I want it to be more interactive, because I think that there's a lot of nuances to working with crystals. And we talk a lot about on the show of how, you know, not every crystal is going to work the same way with every person. How we have a lot of things in common, but we definitely are unique beings. And it's not just an ego trip. We want to think we're special, but just the fact that, you know, we've got all these different levels of minerals going on in our own biological makeup, right? You know, probably 80% of people are magnesium deficient, for one thing. We work with a lot of crystals in crystal healing that have different mineral contents. Some of them have magnesium, some of them have iron, some of them have all these other, you know, various minerals, which are also can be related to the minerals in our body. And a lot of times in crystal healing, we're working with that kind of thing in mind, of the benefits of the content of the stone when it comes to the minerals and chemical composition of it. So, you know, there's some, you know, all of those things, calcium, magnesium, iron, you know, we can go on and on about all the minerals we have in our body that we can also find in different stones. So I think that that's always something to keep in mind. So like if your friend Joe says, oh, the stone worked great for me, and you try it for a similar problem, but it doesn't work as great for you, it may not be because it's, you know, he gave you bad information. It may be that your body chemistry is just a little bit different, you know, maybe you need something else in addition to, you know. So that's what I plan to do in 2016, is talk more about and do more experiments with crystals. And I would love for it to be more of an interactive thing where, you know, I want to hear about the experiences more that you're having working with stones. You know, let's get more hands-on in 2016. And let's start figuring out you know, what relates the best, and what, you know, maybe combinations might be, you know. I love Judy Hall's series of crystal prescription books. In a lot of ways, I think that those ideas that she puts out there in her series, which she's, I think the fourth book in the series just came out, I think is a great starting place, and that it has a lot to do with sort of fine-tuning that as well, and fine-tuning it to our own individual kind of needs. And, you know, I always give this disclaimer when I talk about crystal healing, is that, you know, you want to make sure that, you know, if you think you have a serious medical condition, that you are seeking the advice, the care of the proper licensed medical professional. You know, the proper diagnosis when you can get one is always the best place to start, and then use crystals as a complement to your healing journey. But if nothing else, 2015 for me has been a real eye-opener when it comes to the very practical nature of working with crystals when you are recovering from an injury, when you're feeling under the weather, when you're just emotionally feeling kind of flat, or even bummed out, even down, even depressed or anxious, scattered, you know, all of these different normal things and even abnormal things that we experience and that we go through, you know, walking around on our skin, you know, definitely crystals can be such a wonderful, helpful companion. And when we talk about healing, I don't think that we always necessarily, we're not putting all the pressure on, you know, a little tumbles piece of rose quartz to be, you know, to provide a cure, to some. We're saying, like, you know, help us deal with it, help us on our journey, you know? So I think we have to be realistic in a sense. I don't know that there is a real panacea ever out there for anything. And I don't know, it doesn't seem to be very many cures, you know, that make things that we can suffer from completely disappear instantly, like poof, like magic. But more and more, I think it's really, it's like that saying, you know, it's not necessarily the destination, it's the journey. And so I think that often, you know, we are constantly on a journey to healing, or a healing journey, or healing during a journey. But, you know, healing isn't always the destination. Healing is often the process, you know, and healing is a process regardless of what you're dealing with. So I think it's important to, you know, kind of keep our expectations realistic and do these simple, inexpensive, you know, not time consuming things to help ourselves. I mean, gosh, you know, talking about the foundation stones today and looking at how many centuries this concept goes back, and to know that it goes back a lot more further than that as well. You know, those writers really weren't necessarily aware of what already a lot of pagan traditions had established or thought about the metaphysical and, you know, physical healing applications of the very stones upon which they're laying the foundation of the New Jerusalem on, you know. So it's like they've always been a part of our lives. They've always been a practical, useful tool. Crystals were the first medicine in a very real way. And, you know, there's some very good reasons for that. Because people found it effective, because it helped them, because it alleviated some pain or alleviated some stress or gave them some moral support even and confidence. You see a lot of those ancient writings, they talk about, you know, how it made people feel, you know. You know, then you will walk forth with the confidence to conquer your enemies, you know, whatever was important at the time. And, you know, a lot of people that I talk to now, you know, we've never stopped having those problems that mankind has had for thousands of years. Well, you know, we've had insecurity for thousands of years. We've had fear for thousands of years. We've had sickness. We've had injuries. We've had all of these kind of different emotional, mental, spiritual, physical things that have afflicted us. And you know, our ancestors maybe, you know, kind of knew what they were talking about when they were working with the stones to help alleviate those problems. You know, we've gotten in this kind of, you know, we want instant gratification in our culture these days, and that we'd much rather take a pill for it, you know. But the problem is the pills don't necessarily cure anything at all. They may mask things and they may help us deal with things. And certainly you can take pills to mask things and help you deal with things and alleviate things, of course. You know, they can be very effective that way. But I think, you know, physically and mentally both, it can be very much of a boost to our health and well-being to work with more natural means. So, you know, I'm not on like a, what is it? What do you call it? not a pulpit, not a high horse, not a soapbox. That's what I was thinking of. I'm not trying to be on a soapbox here. But for some reason, and maybe because I have my hand in the bag of stones, you know, these things are kind of flying out of my mouth at the moment as things that, I don't know, maybe need to be said before the year ends, so that as we go into this new cycle, this new year, essentially, that we can maybe make some progress in these ways by kind of, revisiting some of these old ways, basically, when it comes to working with crystals. All right. Well, doesn't look like we have any more calls on the line. And I want to remind everybody that there's not going to be a show next week. I hope that you all enjoy the holidays and have a, fun and safe and happy holiday in whatever way that you celebrate it. And I will see you guys all next year. Next year will be the next show, because otherwise I'd be doing a show on Christmas Eve and also New Year's Eve. So who wants to do that? You guys have probably too many fun plans and aren't going to want to, tune in on those wonderful, fun holiday times. And I'm going to take those days off too. And then I will be back. The show will be back on January 2016, January 7th, Thursday, January 7th, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, to kick off 2016. And, I'm not going to tell you what that show is going to be about yet, because I don't know. I have no idea. Are you kidding me? That's 3 weeks away. Who has a time to plan? But I can say that already I'm starting to book some really fun, interesting guests. And mainly the theme that I thought would be fun for January's shows, which kicks off on, again, January 7th, is going to be manifesting. And because what's a better time to start manifesting than right after you make all those New Year's resolutions, right? So maybe we can all get some tips and ideas on how we can really kind of kick things into gear. We've got some really great authors and experts on manifesting that are going to be on the show. And we're also coming up in 2016, we are going to be also talking more about, there's going to be more talking about chakras, because I can't leave them alone. We're going to be talking about the new spiritual chakras as well. So that's something to think about. I'm not going to give away too much, but certainly, make sure you check the Attune Magazine discussion group on Facebook, and look for me on Twitter and on Facebook, and you'll see some posts coming out also on theresarockforthat.com to catch up and to see what's coming up, so you don't miss out on these interesting shows. And also, there's rockforthat.com is a great place to catch up with any shows you may have missed. It will be thoroughly updated after today's show, and so you can see the whole year there and listen to whatever episodes you may have missed or want to revisit again. Like I said, boy, did we cover a lot of ground. But for now, that's it. This is the show. This is the end of the year show, and I hope that I will see you all next year. So take care, everybody. Bright blessings to all of you, and gosh, get out there and have some fun. Bye-bye.